Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting birthdays today. Excuse me. Lucrecia Borgia, the notorious Borgia family, was a Spanish family. One of the popes, Alexander VI, even fathered children before he became pope, and he was one of the dirtiest popes in Roman Catholic papal history. Lucrecia Borgia was a woman who would invite her enemies and people she wanted to get rid of to lunch or to dinner, and she would poison them. So if you got an invitation to Lucrecia lunch, you begged off if you were smart. Probably the other famous Borgia was Cesare, who was a fighter. There's a famous movie with starring Orson Welles. There's also, I think it's an HBO series of the Borgia. It comes highly recommended. I haven't seen it yet, but I will. Those of you who like classical music and remember the Charge of the Light Brigade, Franz von Suppe, German, was born today. Great attorney, probably most famous for the homosexual film murder of Bobby Franks in Chicago. Clarence Darrow was born today. Some controversy about him recently where he bribed jurors. There's an allegation by an author named Farrell. It's interesting because it's the same name of an attorney in the Steve Neri case, this John Farrell, who was involved in rigging a criminal court case in 1999 involving a U.S. Navy sailor, 18 years old, who had been raped by a political ally of the prosecutor who prosecuted the case. We'll get into that more because now some other information is coming out. But Clarence Darrow had the Bobby Franks murder case. It was a throw case involving two wealthy Jewish boys who went to the University of Chicago. They were homosexual lovers, and they decided to kidnap this kid and who came from a well-to-do family on Chicago's south side. Excuse me, and committed this thrill murder, and they were apprehended because of the kid's glasses were found, and the glasses were traced back to the optometrist. I think that's the story. The wealthy family of the two murderers, they were 18 and 19 students at the University of Chicago, hired Clarence Darrow, who was probably the foremost criminal attorney at the time. Now, this is an interesting audio extract from our archives that where Clarence Darrow comments on crime, but in this particular case, the Bobby Franks murder, this comment by Daryl does not apply to the murders of Bobby Frank. But here, there is relevance in what Clarence Daryl commented on, the origin of crime.
People think there is no cause for crime, except the pure cussedness of the ones they call criminals. But as a matter of fact, there's a cause for everything in this world. And there's no way to remove the evil without removing the cause. There's a cause for all sorts of human conduct, just exactly as there's a cause for all the physical action of the universe. The real cause of crime is poverty, ignorance, hard luck, and generally you. These almost invariably combine to produce what we call a crime. When we look at the prisoners in the jail, we find that all of them practically are poor, at least 9/10. And these have always been poor. At least 9/10 began what they call a criminal career as mere children. 11, 12, 13, at a time of life when the ways of life are fixed. 9/10 of them also are ignorant. They've never had the training that every intelligent parent would think was necessary to keep their child out of prison and make him safe in the community. All of these things almost universally combine to put people in jail. People think there is no cause for crime.
We will replay this. We had a bad copy in our archives. Also today, birthday of Henry Stevenson, who played in these 30s movies, I think Charge of the Light Brigade, some other films. He had this very rich voice. He was born not in England, but in the Caribbean, English ancestry. One of the greatest conductors. He never used a baton. I did learn some of his techniques when I was in music school. I didn't learn from him, unfortunately. Leopold Stokowski and his famous hands. If you remember the Walt Disney film Fantasia, you saw his hands in that very Romanesque profile of his. His family emigrated to England. Father was Polish, Stokowski. Mother was Irish, and he studied organ, and he used to rearrange the seating of the orchestra. He was a great musical arranger of various scores, and Stokowski, he died in 1971, I think, the same day that Maria Callas died, I think. There were four famous musicians that died in that year. Sir John Barbaroli, an Englishman whose family was Italian, Maria Callas, the great opera singer, and George Zell, conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra. I have an interview I did with a musician who played under him. And Stokowski married Gloria Vanderbilt when he was, I think Stokowski was in his 70s, fathered two sons. One of them later committed suicide in New York, jumping out of a window in a high rise. But a great conductor and a great musician, never used the baton. And he lived till about 93. Amazing. They said there's something about conductors and how they build up heart muscle. Among the other birthdays today, another music composer of movies, Miklos Rozsa. If you saw Ben-Hur and some of those other films, he wrote the musical score for that film and many others. Another great conductor who survived Nazi Germany, German conductor, Joseph Kalberth, was born today. Controversial Congressman Henry Hyde, from Illinois, his birthday. Haley Mills, who was the daughter of John Mills, a great actor, starred in many films. One of the best was he was a young sailor in Which We Serve, which was written and starred in by Noel Cowards, about a British ship in the Mediterranean. It was based on the exploits of Admiral Mountbatten, the uncle of Queen Elizabeth. Mountbatten was in the Navy like a lot of the males in the British royal family. James Wood, actor, who played in many movies. Not the Killing Fields, but forgot the field about the LAPD, famous murder. He was born today. Among the deaths, a Jesuit who tried to was part of the plot to overthrow Queen Elizabeth, Robert Parsons, was executed today. Among the other deaths was probably they claimed that this guy was gay because he and James Buchanan roomed together, and this guy was kind of a dandy. He was, this was Van Buren's vice president, Rufus Duvain King. Now, interestingly, President Ford, Gerald Ford, was adopted. His birth name was King, but the family decided to, when he was adopted, they used the name Ford. It wouldn't sound good to have a President King, although had Buchanan died and had Rufus Duvain King lived, Rufus King would have been President King. Rufus Duvain King lasted about 30 days as vice president. He went to Cuba, caught the fever, and died there. This was in the James Buchanan, 15th president of the United States. Among the other deaths today, David Livingston, who was the missionary, went into Africa, and Henry Stanley went after him and found him and where he died, and brought his corpse back to England, where he was, David Livingston, that is, was buried in Westminster Abbey. Those of you who are baseball fans, Ebbets Field is named after Charles Ebbett, who died on this day. One of the great orchestrators, great Italian modern composer, very melodious music, such pieces as The Pines of Rome, The Birds, Church Windows, Ottorino Respighi, who went to Russia to study orchestration under the great Rimsky-Korsakov. Probably the greatest of the modern Russian composers, stands up there along with Igor Stravinsky. On this day also, in 1943, Admiral Yamamoto, the admiral of the Japanese command, commander-in-chief, who plotted the attack on Pearl Harbor. He was a brilliant admiral. I think he served at the Battle of Tsushima Straits when they fought the Russian Baltic fleet, and when Admiral Togo was in command of the Japanese fleet. Yamamoto was flying to Rabaul, and our naval intelligence intercepted the radio communique, and they planned to ambush and shoot the Yamamoto's plane down, which they did. It's the first time in history that this happened. And so when that happened, the Japanese military morale started to go downhill as well. Albert Einstein, founder of discovered relativity and one of the physicists who worked on the atomic bomb, died. And we have the guy, this is relevant to the bicycle agenda when the Nazis overran France and defeated them in 1940, the commander-in-chief of the French armies. And the French had an army which could have defeated the Germans. They had tanks. General de Gaulle was—he was a colonel then—was a big tank military expert. Marcel Gamelin, G-A-M-L-E-N, who didn't even have radio communications. He communicated with his field commanders by carrier pigeon. This guy was really out of touch. And as a result, the French armies couldn't meet the German armies using the latest technology and the latest communications, and they were defeated in the field, the fall of France. And after that, we had the Germans marching in to Paris, and one of the first things that the Gestapo did was to ban as much auto traffic. Jews had their licenses confiscated, their vehicles confiscated. There was restrictions on automobiles, and so the French had to resort to bicycles. That may have been one of the origins of the bicycle agenda that we're seeing here in the United States. The other origin of the bicycle agenda, critical mass, which is once a month or every couple of months, the bicyclists gather en masse and block traffic as a protest against the automobile. Now, we think that this possibly started in an incident in Copenhagen in World War II when Erik Erikson was a OSS spy spying on German oil capability and jet engines. And he was an oil man. He was born in New York, went to Cornell University, and then after that served in World War One, and then he went to work for Standard Oil in their international division and later set up his own business in Sweden. He became a Swedish citizen in 1936, and he made many trips to Germany. The oil business, everybody knows one another. It's a fraternity in and of itself. And the OSS and MI5 blacklisted him, and that killed his oil business. And so he was forced, in effect, he was blackmailed into working for the Allies. And he went into Germany many times and came back with information on German oil capacity and later jet plane development. The Gestapo got wise to him, even though he was shacking up with a wife of a German officer. She was caught and tortured and executed. He was on a Swedish passport, so they had to handle him gingerly. But their suspicions turned to concrete evidence. This guy was spying. So he escaped through the underground and escaped through Denmark and was trying to get back to Sweden. And when he was in Copenhagen, a Gestapo officer who knew him happened to be there. He spotted him on the street and was about to arrest him and then threaten him with torture. And here comes the bicyclist, and they saw what was happening, and so the truck was coming along, and they killed the officers and the Erik Erikson, William Holden in the movie, the counterfeit traitor, jumped in the back of the truck. The bicyclists followed, and more bicyclists gathered and blocked the Gestapo's vehicle pursuing Erikson in the truck. He got on a boat and went across the bay, the straits, and escaped safely to Sweden. After the war, he was exonerated. This is an educational excerpt which we have on our YouTube site, Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas. And in the movie, The Counterfeit Traitor, this is an excerpt from that, and it's very accurate what happened. So if you want to see a really good movie, it also has an OSS connection, which has a connection to one of the criminal cases that I've been working on here in California. Among the other events today, the deaths of the great French aircraft designer, Marcel Dassault, who designed the Mirage jet, which the Israelis bought. Dassault was also a Jewish origin. I don't know if he practiced. Among the events today, in 1521, Martin Luther was called to be questioned by one of the cardinals of the Roman Catholic Church. He was called and interrogated on his heresy. And Luther said, he came up with these 95 theses, which he based on a Bible and his interpretation of how man's relationship to God was in Luther's view. This was heresy according to the Catholic Church at that time. And Luther said, "Here I stand, and God will protect me," in effect. Among the other events, in 1775, we always hear about Paul Revere. But Paul Revere, before he set out on that ride, was accompanied by a guy named William Dawson. Revere was captured by the British, but because of some gunfire, and the British panicked and freed him. Dawson went on and rode on, and they alerted the colonists in Massachusetts that the British are coming. But Dawson should get credit also when he went out on that ride also. They went in different directions, of course, but we always hear about Paul Revere, but never about William Dawson. On this day in 1861, Colonel Robert E. Lee was in the Union Army, West Pointer, served in the Mexican War, was offered the command of the Union armies. He declined because he said his first loyalty was to the state of Virginia. He became commander-in-chief of the Confederate armies. and he was a better general than just about all of the Union generals. And his father had served in the Revolutionary War. He was known as Light Horse Harry Lee. On this day, famous Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, San Francisco SPCA, was formed in 1868. They were formed because of the horses who pulled the cable cars were horribly treated. The insurance companies wouldn't pay off unless the horses were dead. The horses could be suffering, but they had to be dead before an insurance company would pay off. And during World War II, the San Francisco SPCA took in animals from Hawaii because of the fear that the Japanese were going to invade the Hawaiian Islands and kill the animals and do other horrible things that they had done in other countries in Asia. Now, this is interesting, on Nightline last night, or Frontline on PBS, there was brilliant program featuring a famous U.S. Court of Appeals judge, Harry Edwards, very articulate, honest, he seems to know what he's doing, unlike some of these judges, was talking about forensics and how our faith in on these forensic so-called experts is flawed, that a lot of these guys, we don't know where their training was, who trained them, the value of their training, and the scientific background of some of the conclusions that they arrive at. For instance, in the Casey Anthony trial, they had this guy who was a human death odor detector, and he claimed that the smell of death was in Casey Anthony's trunk of her car when the baby disappeared. Now, what's going on is there's a big controversy about fingerprints. For a century, we have been told that fingerprints, there's no two sets of fingerprints in the whole world and in history. And, of course, in 1901, Denmark was the first country to adopt the fingerprint, what can be called a fallacy now. Now, what has come to light is a lawyer in Portland, Oregon, I think it's Brandon Mayfield, after in 2004 there was an explosion, a terrorist bombing of a train in Spain. I think 2,000 people were killed, and the Spanish police sent the a fingerprint to the FBI in Quantico, Virginia, and they came up with a match of this Brandon Mayfield, and they used his military fingerprint records. He'd served in the military, and of course it didn't help that he was a Muslim. He was a white guy who became a Muslim. Well, Mayfield said he'd never been to Spain, and he was just and he was an attorney, and he was just totally out of it. Like, you know, what's happening here? This is really something out of Nazi Germany or the Soviet Union, NKVD, KGB, that kind of thing. And what happened was he was arrested and charged with this terrorist crime, and possibly was to be extradited to Spain to stand trial for the terrorist killing of all these people. Well, it turns out that when they started to examine, when his lawyers started to question the validity of this fingerprint, the one little fingerprint, and how they arrived at this conclusion, it turned out that they had made a mistake, that fingerprint analysis, forensic analysis, used different standards to match a fingerprint. And it turned out that the Spanish police came up with the correct fingerprint, or the fingerprint that belonged to the terrorist, who turned out to be an African Muslim. And, of course, Mayfield, how could he have bombed this train when he had never been to Spain or to Europe? And, you know, he could have been on death row in a federal prison, like the other guy who bombed was accused of bombing the Oklahoma Federal Building. But this is what happens, and Harry Edwards says, you know, we need scientific training and validation of these theorists who come into court, and some of these guys get their forensic training certificate from this outfit in Missouri, where the guy won't talk on camera as to how many people pass, how many people fail. And so you can do it on computer and become a forensic expert by taking this sham test, and it looks like a forensic criminal diploma mill. This is what was implied last night. I highly recommend this to any criminal lawyer. And people have got to start questioning, the capability of these judges. Judges seem to be wooed and persuaded by these so-called forensic criminal crime scene experts, and you need to know more about them. I mean, we know more about a mechanic than we and a doctor than we know about some of these about judges, lawyers, these forensic experts. There's really a disparity here, and people's lives are on the line. We'll get into this some more. Among the other events today, the San Francisco earthquake, and of course we'll get into David Fowler, the author of the book, not the author, the editor of the book, Denial of Disaster, which was written by Gladys Hansen, who was the city's historical archivist at the San Francisco Library. She's retired now. The book is still in print. And David, I worked with him in the 80s at San Francisco Unified School District in the radio station, and I did lectures. But he has warned that San Francisco, the next earthquake that hit San Francisco, because we've been building these high-rises on corners, could very well, there could be a new disaster. We'll get into that another day and show you exactly what he was talking about. He died in September 2001. Also on this day, the Paramount Hotel, where the presidents stay, that was set up in 1907, the year after the earthquake. Chiang Kai-shek of the Kuomintang Party, the Chinese nationalists, revolted and set up his thing and then fought with the communists all those years. And then they joined together, Mao and Chiang joined together to fight the Japanese invasion in 1938. Franz von Papen, here's a German diplomat who always landed on his feet. He was the one who brought Hitler into the German political hierarchy within the administration of President Paul von Hindenburg, who was a famous marshal, commander of the German field armies in World War I. And he was getting senile, and von Papen thought he could control Hitler, but Hitler was smarter than him and sent von Papen off to be ambassador to Turkey and to try to get them in the war. In World War II, Turkey learned from the mistake they made in World War I when they supported the Germans at Gallipoli. Now, in World War II, Turkey was neutral and everybody was spying there. And there's a famous film that involves von Papen called Five Fingers, about how the valet of the British ambassador learned to crack the safe of the British ambassador and get and sell these secrets to the Germans. The Germans paid him with counterfeit money. It's quite a story. Also on this day, after the USS Hornet left San Francisco, General Doolittle in B-25 flew off and bombed Japan. There's a famous movie, 10 Seconds Over Tokyo, starring Spencer Tracy. And then also, the International Court of Justice was set up on this date. The first transatlantic jet flight was made on this date. And then here's another scandal with the Pulitzer. In 1977, this guy Haley, who was in the Coast Guard, got a Pulitzer Prize for Roots. Turns out that Roots was a fraud. But I don't know if he gave the Pulitzer back, just like Janet Cook, another black, who lied about this 8-year-old boy who became addicted to heroin and died in a housing project. And she worked for the Washington Post, and she got a Pulitzer. So there are a lot of these media morons, our media liars, and they get away with it. 90 seconds. So we need to pay more attention to and demand accountability from these people. So we'll end with our usual. We'll be back Friday. And I hope I'm over my cold. And we'll play our ending theme. Pretty soon we're going to get down to politics. I guess all the poker has been played out. Excuse me. So here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a
kick. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
We'll be back Friday. This is Peter Paul Rizzola. Good night.